You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 12th of December, a little 12-12. We'll go into the time machine Tuesday to wrap it up, but first, they just simply have to play better. But what are the other options for Quinn Snyder to alter the lineup to try to fix the struggles that the starters are having? We'll dig into all of it coming up on this edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. Thanks so much for tuning in to Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, behind-the-curtains look, and geeky numbers all along the way. Thanks so much for tuning in. Today's show brought to you by our friends over at Murdoch Hyundai at 4646 South State Street. From the crew over at Grip 6, a Utah belt company that's taking over the nation, or at least all of Salt Lake. As well as our friends over at Stevens Henniger College. All right, let's dig right into it immediately. As I said, today's show, we will look at the struggles of the starting lineup and try to give you what the options for Quinn Snyder are. Okay, let's get to the undeniable statistics just for a second to start it out. And they're not good. The starting lineup that the Jazz are using with Derek Favors and Rudy Gobert and Ricky Rubio and Donovan Mitchell and Joe Ingles thus far are being outscored by 32 points per 100 possessions. An 82 offensive rating and 113 defensive rating. It's ugly. The offense, while they're on the floor, is shooting 39% from the floor and 29% from three. Okay? So that's it's a completely legitimate discussion. I think that's the first and foremost here that has to be addressed, is that this is a legitimate discussion. Digging in, what people are zeroing in on, myself included, is the combination of Favors, Gobert, and Rubio might be the struggle. They are for in 227 minutes. They are minus 17 per 100 possessions. And their offensive rating is an 89, and their defensive rating is a 107. So that's not good. And the same thing you'll see is just that offensively, that group is struggling. 41% from the field, 32% from three, and much less shooting of threes when they're out there. Okay? You could, those are, you're cherry picking slightly. You could probably try to find some other numbers to prove something else if you wanted to, but I think those are the most common. When Joe Ingles is out there with Rubio in Favors, it's not great. In fact, we've got a little bit of a disturbing thing going on that our 10 most commonly used three-man groups are all considerably negative, and somehow 13 and 14. So before we dig through, this is kind of my theme of the week, before we dig into, well, what do you do about Rubio? Do you something about Favors? Do you something about Gobert? Let me go back and I went back and watched the Houston quarter of disaster and the Milwaukee first quarter. So the Houston quarter of disaster, honestly, I kind of just left. I could overanalyze it. I have the notes. I'm going to just, in the sake of kind of time and it was a terrible matchup as much as anything, frankly. Ryan Anderson got hot from three. On those plays, it's not a great comfort zone for Favors to head all the way out there. It's kind of, that's just the definition. I mean, Harden opens it up with a deep three. Anderson hits a three to follow that. Harden hits another three. And I think he might have been fouled on that play. And now you're down 14, right? The Jazz actually get it back to 10. And the Rockets are just great. And then Anderson hits a three. It was a bloodbath to start that third quarter, but really because of the Rockets. So I went to the Milwaukee game, is the one I want to use to analyze. And I'm going to walk you through a little bit of it here. And the lineup is not great, as the numbers would show, But they also played really badly. Like, there's some level here where the answer to this question by the end, I think, is for this group to play better. I'm not sure that this group is one you want out there for 30 minutes a night. But it's not a group that can't play a certain amount of minutes a night. So the first possession of the night, they execute it perfectly on the offensive end. It gets a Favors corner three. Okay, so that's not great. He makes it. And a little bit to the point of the lineup, like, okay, there's perfectly executed play. Milwaukee overshifts incredibly. Favors corner three. It's not a play you really want. Okay? Play number two is a pick and roll on the good ball movement into a pick and roll on the right side of the floor. The floor is open. You've got exactly what you want. You got Mitchell coming in the middle. You got Gobert rolling on an open side, and Mitchell's bounce pass goes out of bounds. It's like it's a turnover. Donovan throws a not great pass. Rudy doesn't quite get open, depending on how you look at it. Donovan's bounce pass never comes up. It wasn't great. Okay? The next play, but that's not. That doesn't have anything to do with the lineup. Okay, so that to me goes into the play better category. The next play, Donovan drives and Favors interferes with the ball on its way out of the cylinder. Donovan got to the rim, missed the layup, brought defenders to him, offensive rebound. Frankly, if this lineup's going to be successful, it's going to have to offensive rebound a little bit. But that's a play better. That's a don't touch the ball in the cylinder. Rubio, on the next play, comes down and throws a pass just lazily to the top without any ball fake, anything. Adetokunbo jumps it because we throw that pass every possession. A lack of awareness around him, and Adetokunbo takes it the other way for a fast break. Okay? That's just play. That's bad. That doesn't matter who's on the floor. Defensively now, we have a bad closeout in the corner that leads to a basket. And now it's a 6-3 game. The next offensive play is a late shot clock. The Jazz get into the shot clock a little later than they should. They don't come up with quite the urgency that you'd like to see them come up with. Donovan Mitchell gets blocked by Henson. And you know what? This one's a little bit of the lineup. Henson is Favors' man. He's sagging off him. The pick and roll was with Gobert. And Henson, who's long, is playing down there. Adetokunbo's guarding Gobert. And so they're hiding Henson. They're hiding Adetokunbo on Gobert, and they're playing Henson in the middle, basically in a zone, and he blocks Donovan. It's also the uniqueness in Milwaukee's defense that they can do that. But that one is definitely one where the defense hurts. Next play, same thing. Okay? Favors takes a contested corner three. Henson clogs up the entire play, sitting in the middle. So here we've got two where, you know what? It's not play better. It's this lineup struggles. Next possession, great ball movement. They work at it. They get the ball to Favors for a baseline floater. It's not a high percentage shot, but it's a good shot. And they score. Rubio Favors pick and roll on the next play. Great pass by Rubio. Game's still close, by the way. It's 8-5 at this point. Maybe 10-5. Rubio pick and roll to Favors. Favors goes to the rim. Great block by Henson. I don't think this one had to do the lineup. I think that's just John Henson's now engaged. He's playing great. On the flip side, Ingles doesn't switch at all. Jazz switch. Ingles doesn't make the switch, and Henson gets a dunk. Okay, now it's 12-5, but that's a terrible defensive play. You're on Favors' bad shot. You gave up a transition the other way, which you could put on both ways. But now it's 12-5. The next possession, Joe hasn't gotten a shot yet and takes one that comes pretty close to a my turn. 10 on the shot clock. Neither of the guys went under on the pick. He still takes the three quickly. We all want him to shoot more. He did exactly what you want right there. If you want him to shoot more. But pretty quick shot, little uncharacteristic. 10 on the shot clock. I mean, there's just some time to work there. The only thing is I would say is Rudy's rolling and probably available, but that's getting Rudy the ball up 12 feet, which isn't great. And Henson is clogging the middle. So there's a little bit of both on that one. Really bad defensive possession to follow. where Peyton drives by a cut, a closeout. Gobert cuts him off. Rubio and Favors are just kind of hanging out in the middle of no man's land without guarding anyone. Giannis cuts to the basket for a dunk. Doesn't really match. The next play, so now you're down 14-5. Now you're getting your ass kicked. And there's a little bit of both here. Some really bad play. And there's some aspects of where this lineup struggles. And maybe Ingles 3 is a frustration of that. The next play, Donovan drives, and it's the ultimate the lineup doesn't work play. Donovan drives in the middle of the lane. They leave Rubio. They leave Favors. Now, with that said, no ball movement at all before this play starts. So Milwaukee, who has incredible length, is a good defensive team, has their feet set. Everyone's sagging off their guy. Donovan comes on a semi-pick and roll and just goes right in the middle of the lane. It just wasn't who we are. And it doesn't work. Donovan misses the shot. Rubio's in the right corner. He doesn't get back defensively. Bledsoe just outruns him to the basket for two free throws. It's now 16-5. So there's a heavy amount of this that is play better. There's no reason to be down 16-5. There's an amount of this lineup is cumbersome and difficult, but play better. Keep yourself in the game. The offensive rebounding rate of the lineup of Rubio, Donovan Mitchell, Joe Ingles, Rudy Gobert, and Derek Favors is 15%. 15%. It's one of the lowest offensive rebounding rates we have. Like, that group should be pounding people on misses. Pounding people. It's not doing it. So there's a lot of different aspects to what's taking place here. But there is a certain level of play better. Today's show brought to you in part by Murdoch Hyundai at 4646 South State Street. When we talk about the Murdochs, you hear us talk about the no regrets buying experience. And what they mean by that is they're going to do every single thing they can to control the controllables on their end. So, 5-day guarantee, free car washes for life, free oil changes, extended hours in the service department. Try to make sure that you get what you need. Now, the Hyundai has been an eye-opening experience for me. I've been driving a Hyundai. I drove the Santa Fe, the Tucson, the Ioniq. If you're in the market for a hybrid, do not just automatically go do the Prius. I'm telling you, there's 7 left in town. You want to go check out the Ioniq. It drives fabulously. Its miles per gallon was up at 50 miles a gallon for a lot of the time that we had it. Sometimes it depended on what went on going up and down the canyon. And you know, then it was at 46. Gosh forbid. And drives with great power. The Santa Fe Sport was a huge eye-opener for me. They had told me a story about guys buying that instead of a Lexus when I first met with the Murdoch family. And to me, I was like, yeah, okay. Then I drove it, got it. Every bell, every whistle, smooth drive, great space, heated steering wheels, great stuff. Check it out. Murdoch Hyundai, 4646 South State Street. And go say hi to my guy Blake while you're there. Yeah, no, just go in. Tell Blake Murdoch, get out of your office. David Locke says I'm here. Yeah, that would go over well. All right, now let's go to the, what are the solutions? So the first one I think people are talking about is break up the Favors Gobert lineup and have, I think you'd have to have Rudy, you could have either Rudy or Derek start. So let's start there, you know. This one's just simple. One guy's a free agent, and the other is signed for 5 years or 4 years. Okay? I mean, that one's just, that's the reality of the business. Some people are saying, well, you know, we're better with Derek. I think they both have their strengths and weaknesses. I'm not about to get into who's better, who's not. I would point out, we pointed out yesterday that the defense has not been great when Derek's been at center recently. And I think that's something that they has to get rectified for the Jazz to be good. The other thing I would point out is the defense has been really good with Rudy. So keep an eye, you know, that's going to take a little bit of time still. The next thing I would, I think benching Rudy is a non-starter, okay? So let's move past that. I frankly think that benching Derek's a non-starter too. So you're going to go to Derek Favors and you're going to say, hey, by the way, I know that you just led us to a bunch of wins and the team played great and you averaged 16 and 8 and did all these things, but yeah, you know what? You're in a free agent year and you've been pretty loyal to us the whole time. We're not going to start you. God tell you what, that doesn't work for Derek. And frankly, I don't think that would work for the other guys in the locker room either. You know, we don't ever talk about that. But unless it gets just so horrendous that you have no choice on that, that's not one that I think you want to do for the rest of the locker room. Or necessarily kind of the players in the league. The other aspect, if you split these two guys' time, how many minutes are you playing both of them? So if we decide to go small all the time, which we have enough, you know, with Joe Johnson seeming very close to a return, possibly Wednesday in Chicago. He practiced yesterday. And you have Tabo and you have Jonas. We probably have 48 minutes of small power forwards, and Joe can play a little bit there. But what are you doing with the 48 minutes of center? Are you playing Rudy 30 and now Derek's playing 18? Yeah, that's not an option. That's not fair to Derek, and it's just not, I mean, I don't know if I need to explain why it's not an option. It's not an option. So even the next aspect of it is if you split this and try to start Derek or start Rudy and you're bringing Derek off the bench now, you're now playing at most, you're playing Derek for at best, Derek's playing 24 minutes a night and Rudy's playing 24 minutes a night. Now both of them are unhappy. Rudy's got incentives in his contract that he's supposed to earn certain things. It's a guy who played 30 some odd minutes a game, 34, 35 minutes a game. As he gets back and is physically better, he's not going to want to go from 34 minutes a game last year to 24 minutes a game this year. It's just, I don't know if you're listening to this thinking, well, he should. It's a team. No. Like you're not going to want to do it either. Don't kid yourself. Favors, who's already down at 28 minutes a night, was at 32 2 years ago, proved what he can do again at 16 and 8. It's already a bit cumbersome. It's already a bit question of keeping both these guys engaged. If you don't get at least 6 minutes out of that power forward or even 10 minutes out of that power forward center combination, you got both these guys at just 30 minutes a night, which is probably fine. 31, 32 minutes a night is probably fine for them. But 31, 32 minutes a night is still going to be, if Gobert plays 32 at center, there's only 16 available then for Derek at center, which he probably, you know, has just shown he can do well. You probably still have to try to at least get Derek 12 minutes a night at power forward. That's hard. So now you're so that's probably more than you want. So now you're already dropping Rudy to 30. You're taking Derek down to 8 minutes of power forward, and now Derek's at 26 minutes a night. You're already kind of maneuvering this thing with them starting together and neither of them's getting the minute numbers that they want. Maybe good for their well-being long-term, but that's not what either both of them want. So, honestly, splitting those two is not a great choice unless it just gets so bad you don't have a choice, but they've also proven they can work at other times before. And I think that's important to kind of look at and realize and understand. Okay, so the other choice in here is the idea that you might do something with Ricky Rubio. And so let's address that. But before we do, let me remind you about our good friends over at Grip 6. I just bought it for my dad for Christmas. The Grip 6 belt system is really, really cool. This is a Utah company. Keenan gave me a call, said to me, hey, I'm interested to know if you'd be interested in doing stuff with us. They sent me it, and I've been blown away. It's really worth checking out. What makes Grip 6 so cool is the fact that Grip 6 has this belt that you slide in underneath, and it has no holes, no loops, just holds, and then you can tighten it perfectly. Actually, we got a really cool email from a guy who was saying that he's actually a little heavier, and this belt is fabulous because you put in, when you buy your Grip 6 belt, you put in what the size you want. And so it comes out really, really well. I got an email from Dave, who's a Locked On Jazz listener, who said he just loves it. That he, let me see if I can find that actually for you. I somehow hit it. About a month ago, Grip 6 advertised on their warehouse sale. I need a new belt, so I figured I'd stop by. It was so easy. Their belts ran true to size, so I only needed to know my waist size. I bought a black and a brown belt, honeycomb buckle, and love it. I've been blown away with how light the belt is, how well it works. It really doesn't slip. I heard you mention that, but I assumed it would slip a bit, but it doesn't. Functionally, it's the best belt I've ever owned. On top of that, it looks great, and it's great for any occasion, from Sunday dress to just chilling with the family. Thank you for the recommendation. And now let's get Grip 6 to put a Jazz Note belt buckle. And it's a licensing issue, so they can't do it. But that's from Dave North. So check it out. Go to grip6.com, grip6.com, and LOCK20 is your promo code. I think there might be a Holiday 25 to try. So I'm going to give you guys, I think there might be a better one than LOCK20. So go to grip6.com and check it out. I think you'll be really, really pleased. I have the carbon fiber, which is probably the one most expensive. You can buy multiple belts, one buckle, multiple buckles, one belt. It's really cool. All right. Ricky Rubio. So let's walk through this one a little bit. There's two parts to this story. The first question on Ricky Rubio is, are you really done? So for those who want to take Ricky Rubio out of the starting lineup, you're done. You're going to call it 25 games into his Jazz run, 26, that it's over. He is shooting the exact career percentage that he has his entire career, except for his effective field goal percentage is better. He's pretty much being the player for the Jazz, close to the player. Statistically, there's some parts where I've been surprised he hasn't created more opportunities for people. I'm surprised at some of his turnovers. But the things that he's not doing well shooting, we knew. And 26 games in, well, so one of two things. One is you're just 26 games in, it's over. You're done. And really, to some extent, if you bench him, are you playing him at all? Like, that would be the first question I'd be interested in. For those who want to bench Ricky Rubio, are you playing him at all? But the bigger picture is, part of the reason of acquiring Ricky Rubio was a belief in the Jazz developmental system that they could help him become a better shooter and then have him become a better player at just 27 years of age. And if you take him out of the starting lineup, which maybe you're going to have to do, maybe this day is going to come. Again, if things don't improve and they don't play better, then maybe you're going to have to do something. But if that's the move, you're kind of pulling the plug 26 games into his run with the Utah Jazz. And that seems pretty early. And part of this is a concept of trying to get him to develop and see if you can get him to be a better shooter. If you watch him work with Igor Kokoschkov, it's clear he's getting better. Now you've got to find a way for that to actually happened in the game. Now, there's no question, in his last five games, he's shooting 27% from the field, 17% from three. So he's scuffling, right? All of a sudden, the last five games, he's averaging 6 points and four rebounds a game as your starting point guard. That's not good enough. The not getting back on defense, the pass up top, those things aren't good enough. Got to play better. And part of that is challenging him to play better and be better. And then at the same time, allowing him to do it. So there, again, he's got to play better. But I'm not sure that from the big picture, just isolating it on Rubio, that the answer is 26 games into his run, we're calling it. Now, the next question is, who, if you replace Ricky, who are you replacing him with? I mean, very subtly, by the way, he's not closing games. Quinn has used Donovan as the point guard in some very, manageable situations. The are you first question would be Neto, and I just, I love how we'll, I think his, he plays so hard, he's so little, he's having a hard time staying healthy. I don't think he's the answer. The other answer is that you decide to start Donovan Mitchell as your point guard. Now, okay, I kind of love it because we all love Donovan, but let's then get some facts in line. One, Donovan's may become a point guard, but right now he's not there yet. He played 9 games of college as a point guard. The player that Donovan reminds me of is a point guard. He reminds me of Damian Lillard. Okay, so I think there's a chance that this guy becomes a point guard in the NBA. To put him as the point guard right now has two downsides to it that I think are significant that you hold off unless you have to. One is, I think you can really make him struggle. Like, it's a lot to ask him to suddenly run the team, deal with that, play Westbrook, Lillard, these guys every minute of every night. I think that they're, and then kind of run the offense and keep an eye on that. You're just, it's a huge amount. Quinn is using him in this offense is pretty complicated. Quinn's using him in astute circumstances. Okay, so that's the first one. I think you could really impede him. Now, there might be a point that if this season gets away from us, and we're going to lose a lot of games coming up here, so when the season, that doesn't mean in December, that means in February, March, that you might, close the season doing it more and more for the final 14 games or something of that sort. The second one is, I do think that if you were to turn the team over to Donovan Mitchell as the point guard, you're tossing the season. Okay? And the reference point I'm going to use on this is the Portland Trailblazers of 2012-2013 with Damian Lillard, who's a terrific player. So Damian Lillard at that point was 22 years old. He had played 4 years of point guard at Weber State. And he started 82 games a year, playing 39 minutes a night for Portland. And Portland went 33-49 that year. 33-49. Yeah, but who'd they have? Well, they had an all-star in Nicholas Batum. They had an all-star in LaMarcus Aldridge. And Batum's a borderline all-star. But they had, LaMarcus was an all-star at that point. They had Wesley Matthews. And they did start J.J. Hickson, who's not great. But they had three high-level. And that was Matthews pre-ACL, or pre-Achilles. So you have Batum doing an awful lot, probably your version of Joe Ingles, but, frankly, probably better. Not quite as good a shooter, but does a lot more, a little longer. LaMarcus Aldridge, who is a better offensive player than anyone on the Jazz right now. And Wesley Matthews, who was pretty solid. 40% three-point shooter. Their bench was lacking. They didn't have the depth. But they won 33 games that year when they turned it over to Dame as the starting point guard. And I just, that might be something we get to, and do realize we're not going to win many games in December. We're favored for like three more games between now. I think we're favored like five of our next 15 games in middle of January. So there's a lot of losses coming. And then it flips. On January 15th, our schedule just flips. But I think you got to kind of look at that if you were to make that move, to some extent, you're tossing the season. And I'm not ready to do that. I think this team still can make the playoffs. And I think we're, again, even though we're going to lose a bunch of games coming up here, I still think we can make the playoffs if we can hold it mentally together. So those are the options. The end thesis statement I would have on this is you got to play better. That this lineup's not great. I think we showed that early. That it has some issues that clog the floor and make it difficult. But you don't have to be beat 27-10 by Houston or 16-5 by Milwaukee. That's not necessary. And that you can then meander around the rest of the game in a better fashion than what we have right now. Be interested to hear your thoughts. All right, Time Machine Tuesday is next. We'll go into the bag. The bag's right here. There's the bag. And pull out a year and see what we were doing on December 12th of that year here in a minute. Are you heading to work today wondering if there's maybe a better option for you out there? Well, Stevens Henniger is built solely for that reason, to help students get a better job sooner. Extremely hard at certain points in life to stay in school, right? I got it. There are times when it just didn't work out for you. It wasn't the right place. Now, you're probably more mature, maybe better equipped for it, and Stevens Henniger is here to help you. Classes start every month. Fast-paced, four-week classes. You're probably talking about 10 hours a week of class. Built for success. They've got a neat thing. They got what they call their three-week dating period, where you have an ability to try it, see what their support is. They get to check you out, see if you're going to work for them. And you can do it for 3 weeks for no cost at all. Financial planner will meet with you at the very, very beginning, so there's no hidden costs. And this is an opportunity for you to open up new opportunities. They've got a career placement staff, whether it's computer networking, computer programming, business, HR, whatever it might be. Maybe it's Stevens Henniger with their small classes, their narrow focus, and their support are the people to help you take the next step in your career. Text keyword to 88588. That's keyword to 88588, or visit youineducation.com. Stevens Henniger, keyword 88588. Time Machine Tuesday. Here we go. What is Time Machine Tuesday? It is the 2012-13 season. That's like only 5 years ago, Time Machine. That's not very exciting. Let's go see what we had going on. We go to the Utah Jazz, December 12th of the 12-13 season. I was even the radio voice. That makes it much less fun. It's searching. The 12-13 season, so this would be 2012. Oh, this is the Ty Corbin controversy. Should we be trying to win? Should we be trying to lose season? These were tough days for us. All right, December 12th, we played the San Antonio Spurs at home. We won our fourth in a row to go to 90. We win it 99-96 for the Spurs. It was just their fifth loss of the season. Tony Parker, Gary Neal, Tim Duncan, Danny Green, Dwan Blair, Manu Ginobili, Boris Diaw, Thiago Splitter, Matt Bonner, Nando DiCola. He's actually played really well in Europe. Corey Joseph, what'd the Jazz have? The Jazz started Mo Williams at point guard. Almost forgot we ever had Mo Williams as point guard. Mo Williams played 32 minutes. Our starting two guard was Randy Foy, who I once made the comment to the distress of SLC Dunk might have a better career than Alec Burks, and people went crazy. I might have been right. We started Marvin Williams as the three, Paul Millsap as the four, and Al Jefferson as the five. We brought Gordon Hayward off the bench that night. He had 19.7 rebounds and 6 assists. The rest of our bench was Earl Watson, Damari Carroll, Enes Kanter, and Derek Favors. Oh, this was in the midst of it. Millsap played 36 minutes. Favors had 12 minutes. Jefferson played 36 minutes. Cantor played 12 minutes. We probably beat the Spurs and fans were unhappy. Millsap had a great day. He had 24 points, 12 rebounds, 5 assists. Al Jefferson in 35 minutes was somehow minus 1. Derek played 12 minutes, was minus 8 in replacing Millsap. I wonder if we coupled him with Favors. And we won it by the final score of 99-96. Let's go back. Let's go to the fourth quarter play-by-play and see what fun things happened in our Tuesday time machine. Oh, that's the Mo Williams three to win it. Mo Williams brings it up, dribble 25, and just bomb the three to win it. 1.3 seconds left. We call the timeout. Marvin Williams, I remember this. Marvin Williams missed a shot. Or Mo Williams missed a shot, I think. And then Millsap gets an offensive rebound, and we take a timeout. And then Mo Williams hits the three dagger to win. Some of you probably already had that. You're better than I am. Pretty good game. Al Jefferson hit a little wheezy shot with 1:47 left. Danny Green came back and tied it, took the lead at 96-94. Millsap hit an 11-footer to make it 40 with 40 seconds left. Tony Parker missed with 31.9 seconds left. We ran a play down to the final seconds. Mo missed a three from 25 feet. Millsap offensive rebound, then out of the timeout, we got it done. Spurs led the entire fourth quarter. We tied it at 73, and the Spurs led by as many as six, when Gary Neal hit a three, and six when Tim Duncan was 6 minutes left and the Jazz worked their way back. That team, I think, ended up making the playoffs, didn't it? So, nice work by the Jazz on that night. Gordon Hayward had 8 fourth-quarter points along with 5 rebounds and 3 assists to carry the Jazz to that December 12th, 2012 win in our Tuesday time machine. Thanks for tuning in to today's Locked On Jazz, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Hope you're doing great. Have a super day.